Everybody say it mean.
Who's that out there living the dream? Let's blow in the bean. Who's that still smoking all that green? Let's blow in the bean. Come on, y'all, let me hear you scream. Let's blow in the bean. Let's blow in the bean. Let's blow in the bean. Go.
Let's blow in the bean. Back in your motherfucking face. It's been a little bit, suckers.
Back at it.
And this is going to probably run a little bit longer just because we got a little bit more to get off our chest. But it's been a fairly dull couple weeks as far as MMA. So I feel like we could really cover a lot of topics and then get into our breakdown.
Yeah, I think that the only thing we'd be talking about the 2 weeks before would be Floyd and Connor. And I think everyone's over it.
Over it. Well, we could have talked about the Lalaw versus Rampage fight, which was boring. We knew that it was going to be boring. Lalaw avenged his loss against Rampage, where he should have probably won that first fight in general. So they're 1-1. Rampage came in super fat. Fight was super boring. Where do they both go? Retired.
Well, I know Rampage said if he had it all to do over again, I was watching him on an interview, that he wouldn't even fight. He would have never, ever, ever fought.
I feel like Lalaw just talked about it, about how Rampage talked to him about that specific statement in the back, and it wasn't that he regrets fighting in MMA, is that if there was a regret, is that he didn't get to spend time with his family, and MMA took that from him, but
how'd you afford to keep a roof over your family's head?
Exactly. There's many, many ways you can look at it, and once a fighter starts talking like that, it's kind of like, all right, what are you going to do? But don't have your foot out the door. You know, shit or get off the pot, Rampage. The last thing we want to do is see you come in overweight and get hurt by somebody, even though he was still very competitive in the fight, and he would be competitive in many fights. Competitive isn't necessarily winning, and I don't know if there's too many more wins in Rampage's career. So go out on top. Go out with when you've still got all your faculties about
you. What else
have
you been doing? Without
movies,
MMA.
The A-Team. He did the A-Team a while ago.
No, you. What are you doing this week? I don't care about Rampage.
Rampage and all the shit he's done. I've been doing the regular old workday shit, but other than that, trying to stay up on this MMA community shit, listening to as many podcasts as I can, but I've been listening to the same couple guys go on every podcast rotation right now.
Yeah, everything.
They're just the same. So I feel like we took a little constructive step back just to come at you guys with fresher shit.
A lot
of studying. I actually watched Split, which is the new M. Night Shyamalan.
Oh, how was that? I heard he's back.
I liked it. Actually, I watched a different M. Night Shyamalan something not long ago, and it was the worst shit I had seen in a long time. But this Split was actually really good. I don't want to give any spoilers away, but it really will make you a fan of his again. I recommend it. And it opens the door/window for a lot of more films to come out.
I'm into it. I've heard good stuff about it. And I like his... I'm not into scary movies ever, but M. Night Shyamalan is like this
thriller.
Smart line of like, yeah, intensity without like frightening me.
Yeah.
Makes you think a little bit.
All I want to say with Split a little bit, I don't think it'll give too much away, is do you remember that fucking horrible movie Sybil? About the lady with all the personalities.
Yeah, but I think that was like a huge movie in the 70s.
It was huge, but a lot of it was found to be actually fiction as far as a lot of the actual studies. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people say that it was actually a psychologist that had ended up influencing her and putting these other so-called person. Either way, if you like that movie, you're going to love this. And I really recommend it. Another one I thought I would never recommend, and I'm a manly man. But I would recommend
Traveling Pants. Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants.
No, Too Long Fu. Thank you. That's the one. No. I would say Sing. I recently watched Sing, and I thought I put it on for someone to be like, oh, here, watch this while I get some other shit done. I ended up sitting down and watching it. It was actually, I hate musicals.
Hate them too.
Yeah. The CGI cartoon aspect necessarily isn't always my favorite, but I found myself
cartoon musical.
Intrigued.
XX.
I would
Those
agree, but I would say I'd recommend it, but don't plan a movie night around it. Don't plan to freaking Netflix and chill watching this movie.
Okay, I'm going to tell you what I've been geeking out on. I stayed up way too late two nights because I was addicted to this show. It's called Big Little Lies, and it is top 10 best. It's like, it's almost like a docuseries, kind of like The True Detective on HBO, where it's just like these stars, 8 episodes. It's like a long movie.
Oh, I like
Big
that.
Big Little Lies, Reese Witherspoon, Nicole Kidman, Laura Dern, pretty much everybody in it is at least a B-list actor or actress, if not an A. Uh-huh. It is the best shit. It is like a woman's True Detective. And I feel like every dude will watch it too, because the sex scenes in it with Nicole Kidman. Oh, the main dude in it is Eric Northman.
Nicole Kidman's, sorry, the one who's married to Keith Urban, who's creepy as shit, right?
I always thought she was creepy. I always thought she had too much plastic surgery. And I always thought I was over. Palms
with her fingers out.
Woo. In this, she has not only regained her hotness, she is an amazing actress. Reese Witherspoon, huge fan now. Yeah, it made me a fan of every single person in this.
Just so you know.
And she's on Wild, which is the whole movie about the Pacific Crest Trail, which I haven't watched that either. But this show made me a goddamn fan. I will say, just because of the type of person I am, probably by episode 4 or 5, I'm like, I see how this is going to end. But it didn't ruin it for me, and the exact way it ended was still beautiful. Like, it was see it all. So the whole show starts with, like, police detectives giving a press conference that somebody's fucking dead. Somebody's got murdered in this town, and they have tons of broken bones, and all this shit's going on. And then it unfolds, and you meet all these housefrals in this rich town. They live in Monterey, California, that island. So it's all, like, the richy rich. Yeah. And so then you're just learning about them, like, dropping their kids off at school. One of the kids fights another kid, so it makes the parents go at it. They're all really rich. And you just know the whole time, at the whole show you're watching, somebody dies. So you don't find out who dies till the very last episode.
Oh, cool. I like that.
Yeah, so
I
it's like so it's fucking... Kind of but backwards. Eric Northman from
True Blood,
he's like one of the main guys in it. Sexy as all get out. Him and Nicole Kidman have some of the best simulated sex I've ever seen. Blows Game of Thrones out of the water.
Wow.
He full of
penetration.
I'm like, I can't believe they're not.
Yeah, right.
I can't believe they're not. Right. She's such a good actress. And yeah, you have to see it. I think all men would like it too, but all men could turn it on for their wives and go and play football for a full day and their wife wouldn't even know they were gone.
A quick other show that I did get into over the weekend that I binge watched was The OA. I know a lot, it's on Netflix. A lot of people have been raving about it. I could see that some of the episodes in the middle get a little
bit. Did it come out with another season?
Not yet.
I just watched it again.
I just watched it for the first time, actually, over the weekend. Or not over the weekend, maybe a little while back. But it reminds me of, just because it's one of those, like, 8-part series.
It should be a long movie.
Yeah, exactly. But it also goes into everyone's life, like you're saying with this show. And I'm definitely going to watch Big Little Lies.
G will love it.
Oh, good.
She will love it. All right. I started it with Jules. She fell asleep. I kept watching it. Yeah. And then I kept getting off work, and I got off work really late, and I would stay watching it for like 3 hours. And I'm like, just one more episode. Mo is the one who told me about it. She's like, you have to see this show. You'll like it. And everybody's been telling me about that, The Story of Us. I'm not going to watch that. I'm going to tell everyone right now.
I have no idea.
I've never seen it, and I'm never going to watch it. I'm not into family dramas. I didn't like Parenthood. I'm not into that television genre of, like... And what people think is deep on shows like that, I usually don't. I usually am one past that.
This Is Us, I think, is the show we're talking about, right?
Now,
I haven't watched it either, but I feel like I've heard it's about families, and especially if you have kids, is where you gotta watch it. And guess what I don't got?
I don't wanna.
Exactly. And I don't need that, so I'm like, there's plenty of other TV out there that'll fill my time. A little bit of Gold Rush, Alaska Gold Rush.
I know, everything in my environmentalist self hates that show. I hate that they're tearing up the planet, but I'm so into it.
And I agree with that. That's one of my trashier shows.
But if
I went
out there to work, I'd be working for that young buck. I would never work for that guy with the fucking goatee.
The Oregonian dude who's giving all Oregonians a bad name.
He's just a dipshit.
He's a dipshit.
And his dad
doesn't
just lets him do
anyone.
Whatever. It's like they're rich people playing in gold mining.
I think it's the production that actually funds all of him, because there wouldn't be any fucking smart person with money that would give that guy money to go look for gold out in Oregon. He did this last... Oh, horrible shit. Moving on to a little bit of fight talk. A little bit of Twitter pop. Well, just some signed fights that we had come up over this little break that we
the
had.
The best fight that was signed.
The best fight.
We don't know. I see some things say it's official.
Right.
And some things say it's not.
With
I think we
that
should just go
quick,
it's official.
Dias Dikesi. I gotta say, I was wrong. He is not gay. He has a wife and two kids. Oh, yeah. I just wanted to correct it.
I think we already did.
No, I don't think we... I think we corrected it amongst ourselves and said we were going on the podcast.
I think we corrected it last podcast, no?
No, we haven't had one since then. But either way,
but we don't think he's still a good guy.
Yeah, we didn't say anything bad.
If anything, it was a compliment to him. We thought he had good style.
Yeah, right. Right, right, right. So, the best fight that might be...
So, the bone crusher's not crushing bones.
Was Donald Cerrone versus... Robbie Lawler is a potential fight that some people say is official, some people say it's not. That's a hell of a fight.
That's a fight.
That's a hell of a fight. We haven't seen Robbie. The interesting, though, is the USADA stuff that came up with Lawler and Tom Lawler.
Yeah.
What does this mean for Robbie? Because they couldn't find him, and supposedly he was at Combat Club in Florida, Orlando-ish area.
Yeah, I think he went from the Boca area with
Top Team,
the American Top Team, to Orlando.
Right, which there was a falling out, because I've heard Woodley and other guys say, I know why he left, let him tell you guys. Mm-hmm. But apparently it's not on the up and up. He left because he wasn't feeling good about where he was at or what he was doing. So Cerrone's coming off of, what will he be? It'll be like 6-9 months off of his KO that he got to fight Lawler.
I don't think that long, would it be? When was he knocked out? 205?
2 months ago, if that.
Who knocked him out?
Masvidal.
Jorge. That was 205, right? In December?
I think so. Right around that time.
Yeah, 5 months.
Yeah, six months.
It should be a good...
It's close, but it's close because he also almost got knocked out 2 months prior to that against Matt Brown, so it's accumulation kind of thing going on with Cerrone.
Not to mention, who knows what Cerrone's doing on his off time that he's almost knocked himself out on the reg.
It is, I would almost say, like, I know that he's getting up there in age and he's had a long fight career, but more so, like, take 6 to 8 months off. Dude, especially against the guy with Lawler that has power and is willing to get in there with you.
I think this is such a compliment for Cerrone that it really shows that he's a money fight now. He doesn't have to put himself in these wars. And then, to me, I can't think of somebody who you'd go in against and anticipate a war other than Robbie Lawler. Like,
It's going to be a fucking scrap.
It's like... You know, ring rust is real.
Yep. Which Robbie Lawler might have as well. There's so many.
So much more. There's so much. How long has Robbie been out of the ring?
Yeah. They're on both of these sides of these fighters.
What's your gut tell you right now on that fight?
Ooh, I'm going to say Donald Cerrone off my gut right now. That's
really
just
my, for the first time ever, gut says Robbie Lawler knocks him out. I just don't think... I think Cerrone's looked chinnier than anything in there lately. Matt Brown almost took him down.
It's true. I could see myself
waking
up. And
hasn't Robbie Lawler fought at 185?
I feel like he might have at, like, Strikeforce and stuff
that
like that.
That is a big difference from Donald.
Yeah, who used to fight at 155.
Yeah.
But
the cool thing with Donald, if he gets knocked out, he still has no problem going to 155. Or if the UFC does the 160, has no problem hitting that either.
If they made a 160, 165 category, it'd change the game.
That's Habib.
Change the game. There's so many fighters that would fight into that category from both from the 55 and the 70 that are just in there. Other fights that got signed that are really fun, Alexis Grasso, who just came off of a loss to Felice Herring, which I've been really high on, against Angela Hill.
Oh, that ain't good for Grasso.
That ain't good. That is a tough fight for Grasso. Evil Twin actually has Grasso all day, and I'm like, dude, is he lip riding too much?
lip service. He's giving a little lip service. I just don't think Grasso...
I just think Hill's gotten that much better. Yes. It's not that Grasso's any worse.
I say Hill beats Felice Herring right now. And I like Felice. I think she's looking better than ever.
She's looking good.
But Grasso, you know, those girls went through the tough house. And I think that there's something to be said about that. You know, they've already had the competition of each other. And so I feel like Grasso is just, it's like she needs to go into the next tough house before she's hitting this rung of girls. I don't think she's up to this level yet. Uh-huh. But if you go by record, Angela Hill doesn't have this great record. But as far as her division, Angela Hill's fought beasts the whole time.
Yep.
The whole time. She hasn't really gotten a gimme fight. So I feel like this isn't good for Grasso. This is a little too much experience.
I agree. I think that this is a tougher fight than she should be having right now, especially coming off of a loss to Herring. There's just many other fights that Grasso could... But in this division, now that I'm thinking about it, maybe they don't want to. Because traditionally, a guy on a loss will go against another guy on a loss. And then they get out, which they're both on losses.
Yeah, they're both.
But still, I could see both of these women being good for the division. So you'd want to keep one, if not both of them.
The 115 is the division of murderers.
But you're not going to kick... Like, who I'm thinking is, why would you want to kick either one of them out on such a light division? With such less bodies.
I don't know if it is. It's like, look at even the top part. You got JJ. Yep. Easy. Yep. You got fucking Andrade.
Yep,
you got Claudia Gadelha.
Who just beat Hill.
Yeah, you got Claudia Gadelha. You got KK. You got Felice now looking good. You still have Carla Esparza, who barely any of those chicks could really beat on the ground.
Marcos.
It's like, there's tons of...
Yeah, it's heavy. It's heavy. It's
thicker than you'd think for Grasso to just be walking in and fighting someone like Hill, who's top 10, but you know what? Here's the thing. Angela Hill's unranked. Tell me that's not bullshit. She should be ranked if she walked off Invicta being the champion.
That doesn't happen.
It's crazy.
It doesn't happen.
It's crazy.
There's been many
that
champs
unranked
that have come over from the male's side and they just are unranked, but sometimes they'll get a tune up fine, sometimes they won't. UFC really has, with these new matchmakers, it's all evolving as well as far as what avenue they want to go with WME. Like, they are putting money into certain people. They picked up the Karate Hottie as far as management.
Yeah, I forgot about Michelle Waterson in that division.
Exactly. Rose Namajunas.
I forgot about Rose. You still have PVZ
that's PVZ's lowest.
No.
Crossover's PVZ.
That's
all
what
day.
I was about to say.
All
that
day.
Is exactly what
that
I was about
the
to
fight
say.
That I
that's
watch,
what you put
but
him
they
up
would
against.
Protect her. They're protecting PVZ in that fight.
There's a girl fight coming up where we'll talk about it this weekend. It's like Grasso carried all the momentum of people thought
Aldana,
she was going to be the next 115.
Aldana versus Turkigian.
All of a sudden, you got an alpha male who actually has fucking potential.
Yeah. That's
and
a fun fight.
Her body, Aldana's body, doesn't look like she's had all the training that if you take like Felice Herring from a year ago to
shredded.
Felice Herring now.
Well, she's always been a little shredded beast. But yeah, I could see Aldana. But Aldana's in that weird thing because there's no 125 division that she has to go from 135 to 115. She just might not be... I bet she could lose like 10 more pounds and be shredded, but I think she's tall because she's pretty tall if I remember
reading
her
stats.
Yeah,
I think she's a weird body, though. I don't think she's cut up at all.
She's not muscular. No. She's like definitely your aunt that you're just like, oh, she's got two kids and it's just like works at a shelter. Like, she does not look intimidating at all. Neither does Grasso, but they're putting in good work in the UFC. Another fun fight coming up, which I think it's going to be the first time I pick over this young man, but Derek Brunson versus Dan Kelly. I'm going to have to go with Brunson on this. I think Dan Kelly, I've been riding Dan Kelly's coattails for a long time, and he's made me more money than most other fighters, but in this specific matchup, I see the wrestling working for Brunson so well, as far as Kelly not being able to take him down and wear him out that way, that Brunson's going
to
end
Brunson's
up
Brunson's just looked so sloppy to me in the last few fights. I feel like the people that you can't get sloppy with in the UFC are the veterans, and there isn't too many more vetted than Dan Kelly. So I feel like I got Dan Kelly on that submission. Woo-hoo! I think he out-cardios him, and I think he submits him.
We'll see. It's
but
definitely an
interesting
fight.
He has to make it through that 2 minutes of getting ran after.
That's what I think. And guess who knocked out Dan Kelly? Smiling Sam Alvey. Not the best technique, but power. I feel like Brunson's in that same boat.
Yeah.
I feel like Brunson's
in
that
same
boat.
I think Sam Alvey, though. I would pick Sam Alvey over Brunson right now.
Oh. Yeah. I'd fight them each other, and I'd pick Brunson on that all day.
I feel like I'm over Brunson. I feel like he's cost me in my last two times I've gone.
Yeah. Well, I feel like he totally won that Silva fight, but we already went over that.
Yeah.
Yeah,
true,
and a lot of people
true,
do.
True.
So, last fight that I really stuck out. There's been many more fights, but these are the ones that I feel like we could talk about and we're going to have fun talking about is Kevin Lee versus Michael Chiesa. That, I feel like, is definitely a top 10 contenders matchup. They're moving spots in the division and it's just an incredibly fun fight. Both the wrestling's going to kind of neutral itself out. We know that Kevin Lee's boxing's on point because he's training Connor. Or he's training... Who's
or
he
Floyd.
Training? Floyd acting like Connor. But Chiesa, I've picked Chiesa...
Speaking of that, Gunny said he was in the gym with Connor the last few times. Mm-hmm. And he usually practices with Connor.
Uh-huh.
And he says he has not been practicing with Connor. Connor has been boxing only.
Wow.
Which I think that is a huge tell.
He's getting ready. Yeah, it's a big red flag. Like,
yeah,
he really
he's
is getting ready.
Only.
So, who would you have in that Kevin Lee Chiesa fight initially?
Chiesa.
Automatically.
Automatically.
I think it's a tough wait. I think Kevin Lee has looked amazing.
I think Chiesa is going to have so much more of a gas tank and play it smart. Say, I almost see it similar to the Dan Kelly
runs. I was about to say, it's the gas tank for Chiesa. Yeah. He just pushes a pace, and even though Kevin Lee has definitely improved in leaps and bounds on his cardio, I think Chiesa's that Tony Ferguson next level of like, no, we're going to take you into deep waters now. Like, yeah. We're swimming out there now.
Or
we're
getting in the riptide, Daniel Cormier. I think that the same, like Daniel Cormier is going to always take people into deep waters. Yep. Like if you think you have cardio, how you going to feel with DC up against you? That's kind of exactly, I mean, we're going to talk about
this. Yeah, we definitely got a breakdown coming up.
I feel like so many of the, there's something new that I've noticed the last few years of the UFC. And I feel like it used to be knockouts, how quick they can get it done. Whereas the guys are being so chess player now where their cardio is a big thing. And they will, you know, take, I mean, JJ, she always waits until the fourth round before she's going to light girls up. I think a lot of the 5-round fighters were just seeing a different whole style come out for
I would agree.
To be a champion, you have to be that type of fighter.
I agree 100%. And that's good because it just grows the sport along. It makes, it weans out the people that are just sure athletes, which has really started to happen, where you used to see a lot more where people would be like, he's an Olympic lifter, he's a really good athlete, where it's like, really good athletes aren't making it as much anymore because technique always beats athleticism. So now we're seeing the athletes that are also technical. And I feel like Chiesa's in that boat. So is Kevin Lee. And they're both going to have long careers, but it's going to be a scrap, a hell of a scrap. Also with Kevin Lee, did you happen to hear him on Ariel Helwani recently? No. It was actually a really fun interview because Kevin Lee came right up and was just like, hey, you finally got me on here. I've been asking you for 3 years to put me on the show. What's happened? And Ariel talked his way around it and was like, oh, I don't know. I don't necessarily remember. A bunch of fans started tweeting in and showing his post-dated tweets of like, oh, at Ariel Helwani, like, what's up? So Kevin Lee definitely let Ariel have it. And Ariel talked his way out of it like he does. He's a good talker. He was like, it's not on me. It's on the promotion. Definitely pushed it aside. Either way, I just like that somebody came at Ariel really hard. And Ariel felt it a bit, but he did switch it and started saying, we all know Kevin Lee's super sensitive. We all know Kevin Lee's. I'm like, bitch, you cried on goddamn air for an hour and Kevin Lee's too sensitive. He's just coming
and
at you
I
like a
man.
And
I feel like at another man, to call another man, you might as well be saying, we all know Kevin Lee's a bitch.
Yeah, that's what I thought too. That's what I thought. And it was funny all the way around.
Ariel,
I enjoyed
right
that part,
now,
but
I feel
like
the UFC or the fighters felt like they needed Ariel. A danger zone Ariel gets in is he's not super entertaining. The reason his show's so successful is because he gets more of the fighters on it than any other shows.
Oh, yeah.
There's too many UFC MMA shows out here now that the fighters can get on that they don't need to fucking kiss Ariel's ass anymore.
I feel like
he better start treading. Like, I don't like him, like, talking shit to the fighters like that.
Yeah, I agree. I think there is a level of disrespect that I'm just like, really, dude?
Or just man up, Ariel, and just be like, well, you know what? You weren't a big enough star yet.
Like, he did. Ta-da. He did say that.
Fighter and the kid says it without even saying it. They're like, so-and-so wants to come on the show, but frankly, I don't know what I talked to him about for an hour. He's not that interesting yet. So I'm like, I agree with Brennan there.
So any other Twitter topics that are off the top of our heads that we wanted to go over? Because
I'm sure
it's been
there's
a little
stuff going on in the world, but nothing that is new. I'm sure there's political BS. I know there was another terrorist in quote attack. And what?
In Russia? Was it the Russia thing? I haven't looked into it too much.
Me either.
There's so much shit going on in our side of the.
What makes it a terrorist attack if the attacker's Muslim? Like, really, what separates a terror? I watched some documentary on, like, in the 60s, there was, like, a tower shooter in a college that
he called up
in a tower.
That was one of the first mass
things
killings.
That happened in America.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, but it wasn't a terrorist attack, because it's a white person. And I think there was one of the schools, like Virginia Tech or something like that, where
the Asian guy.
Asian guy, not a terrorist attack, because it's an Asian.
Interesting.
So,
I never thought of that.
Yeah, so I'm like, huh. It's funny that they're only terrorist attacks when, or even Kaczynski, the Unabomber, all these. Or even if you take a fucking serial killer that's eating people. like, not as, that's a serial killer. That's not terrorism. You know, like, I don't know. I'm just, it's interesting to me, the terrorist attack all the time. And I'm always like, well, and they'll come out really quick, like even with the Orlando shooter. It's not a terrorist attack. He was a homosexual.
What I think with that, though, that's genius that the news did, is that if this guy's trying to be a martyr of any sorts in their culture, what's the one of the worst things you could call them? A homosexual. Okay. So that instead of him being like, oh, well, he killed a... And everybody's somber, the media is more just like, someone else come do that and we're going to tell everyone you're gay too.
Well, did you hear this? There is the first... This I don't even... It makes me like... Bleh. There's the first trans woman Muslim.
I don't think that's possible. That's not possible though, right?
I don't... I'm befuddled.
Yeah.
I saw a picture of her. Uh-huh. So she's trans. She used to be a man. Now she's a woman. In full Habib. Or in full Habib. I've never given that off. In full fucking burqa.
Burqa.
In full... What is that? There's another, not just burqa. What's the... Habib. Isn't it a Habib?
I don't remember the exact terms of what all of their specific...
I feel like the full coverage is... It's something like that. I might be wrong. Write us on Twitter and correct hijab? Me. I'm not trying. Hijab. Hijab?
Yeah, it's some shit like that. Didn't Nike just come out with one?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, but there's like two different... Yeah, whatever. But anyways, this trans person's in the full garb, and that makes me like...
Don't they stone him to death?
So you were I could totally
be wrong. Listeners, fill me in, but...
I feel like in Saudi Arabia...
Homosexual community, as a Muslim in general, didn't tend to fly.
No, not in the Muslim culture, but yeah, I know in some Muslim actual... Like, I know in Saudi Arabia, if you're gay, you're screwed. But they actually... Something else completely off topic. Well, it's not really. Like, I feel like in Russia they just rounded up 1,000 gay men to...
I did see that.
Yeah.
But like, it was a protest or something that was going on?
And they were like, not in Russia, you ain't gay. You can hang off buildings with your one arm and you can, you know, drive into traffic with a radio controlled truck and do whatever you, but you ain't going to suck a dick here.
Uh-huh.
As a man.
Do you think that was hands down by Putin? Do you think he sent them all out there to get them?
I don't know what is Putin's deal. I think Putin is... I never seen a straight man ride a horse like I've seen Putin.
Have you ever seen Amir Latifi riding a horse?
But Latifi, sometimes I think, gay.
He seems a little
homosexual.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Is he... He's Swedish or something?
Oh my gosh. Speaking of off topic at my job. Uh-huh. I have the best gaydar, but I was totally talking to these two girls that work there, and I was like, oh, are you guys little besties? You always work together. And one of the girls is like, she's my roommate. We're together. And I thought they were both, like, total straight women, women. I was really floored that they're lesbians that are together, and I have the best gaydar, and they just seem like two straight women. Yeah, I was, like, blown away, and they're younger and stuff.
So one wasn't the more male, and the other one was the more female. They were both just college girls.
College girls, like, that both seem like normal college girls. Like, I would never... Not that gay girls aren't normal. But I just thought normal straight college girls. Uh-huh. I really have such good gaydar. Even when people are hiding it, I'll think in my head, they'll be like, oh, my boyfriend. And I'll be like, that girl is so gay. Or same for men. I would have never guessed it. And I was floored where I was like, oh, is that your little bestie? Like, and all of it. Then I felt the need to reiterate that I was gay.
I was about to say, did you do that?
Yes, I was the one that it's like, oh, I'm married to a woman.
Some mom is just like, oh, my son's gay too. And you're like, we weren't even talking about that.
I had to overcompensate. Like, I listened to black music.
Uh-huh.
Exactly. Like, all of a sudden, I had to do like the total, oh, you're Mexican? I really love tacos.
Yeah.
Oh,
which
shit.
Interesting thing, just going into weird topics. Over the weekend, I met an older couple that I know, they're the parents of some friends I have in the area. I like them. They're nice people. They're former veterans. I mean, as white America as you could get. They're in retirement, living in Florida. I'm going through the DMV line or tax collector line with them, and we're talking about a little Marine Corps military stuff, and all of a sudden they're like, oh, we're here for these immigration stuff. We're here to do all our immigration stuff. And I'm just looking around like, I'm the only Mexican in here, and you decide to get in a conversation with me about immigration. What sense does that make,
what
people?
What made you think of that?
Why would you guys... I don't get offended, but I could see where other people would get offended. And it's just... I'm American. Born and bred. Most of my family's American now. Transitioned over and all that. And it's not... It's just a really weird conversation to have out of nowhere with people. And I feel like it happens to me a lot. And I don't know if it's people don't have anything else to talk about. So immediately they go to the immigration talk.
People always have to tell me how comfortable they are with gay things.
All of a sudden, and it's like, why are we talking about this?
I have people tell me, I love Ellen. Yeah. Like, out of the blue, they tell me that. Yeah, and I'm like,
I don't give a shit about that bitch.
I think she's so lame. She stopped being funny years ago.
Yeah, right?
But really, I'm like, gosh, I have nothing against Ellen. I just am feeling the need to fight.
Yeah. Because you're just like, where did this even come from, people?
Yeah.
So just...
No one ever talks to me about immigration. And
exactly.
They all bring up fucking gay shit to you.
Exactly.
So,
what are
you're
we
letting
doing
me know
here?
What you're thinking about. Why are you thinking about me in bed? Why are you thinking about you climbing a fence over the border?
Right. Or having my paperwork with me because I'm a citizen. So I shouldn't. Like, I got my ID. I got whatever. It was just weird. Get shit together, people. Freaking think before you talk. It's all good, though. We all have those days. So, moving on to the breakdown. UFC 210, headlined by Daniel Cormier versus Anthony Johnson. And this is a rematch.
Can you believe this is 10 big fights after UFC 200?
Just moving right along.
No, but this is the second big UFC we're about to see Daniel Cormier not fight John Jones.
which John Jones actually is off of one of his probations. He did enough community service for one of them. I think he's got like 3 more months before he's
able
to...
Would you put him... I think he needs a tune-up fight.
Who? OSP?
I know. Who is somebody else he would be able to fight?
Anybody and beat them. Like, I don't think he, of all people, he doesn't need the tune-up fight.
You think he's fine?
I think he's fine going right into the
given
championship.
The winner of this.
Yep. Exactly.
And either way, it happens.
Who could you put against John Jones that would be a tune-up fight? They all are tune-up fight. Not that...
Yeah.
It's not a hard fight anywhere, but John Jones is a type of competitor, and he's proved it more so than anybody, that you could stick him right into a championship, and he will go. Happen versus Gustafson, and so you can't put him in. There's just too many. That division's a little bit lighter. We always like to say it's a light division, and it's totally not. It's actually fairly stacked. The 205ers, definitely, let's just start from the bottom up, and there's going to be some debuting guys. We're going to move through the fights that we have a little bit more to talk about.
Yeah, if they're not super exciting, or if we don't have anything to say, we'll just fly through it. Are we going to do our picks for DK?
Well, can we? Because I feel like we've been getting pulled because we've been doing our DK stuff, remember?
Well, I don't really give a shit about iTunes anymore. If you guys can't find us on iTunes, you can always hit up lesboandthebean.com. We'll get it. If you always are on lesboandthebean.com, you can get the newest episodes. It's always up right away. We're going to find other podcasting sites to get ours on. I think SoundCloud and other things. I just think iTunes is bullshit.
We keep getting flagged for stuff.
We keep getting flagged because we'll put UFC in our, you know, like
Draft
UFC Kings. Super fans or DraftKings. And so we're getting pulled. Or we don't even know if we're getting pulled because our name has Lesbo and somebody's finding it offensive.
Right. And then with the help we try to get to try to rectify what we're doing, it's like iTunes doesn't want to help. So it's like, all right, well, the internet's a pretty big place. So we'll find
it.
Yeah,
we'll do this. And
Twitter's always our home
time,
base.
And hopefully within the next, we said before episode 50, we wanted to be live on YouTube. So that's still the goal.
Ooh, we're getting there.
We're getting there, you guys. It's
we're
episode. Yeah,
there.
We're 4 episodes away.
Yeah.
Oh, shit. Or what? No, 3.
Yeah. Yeah,
episode
yeah,
47.
Yeah. Exactly. So, first fight of the night, we have a debuter at 125 pounds. Shit, you're going to have to help me with the pronunciation.
Magomed Bilulatov.
Bilulatov versus Janelle.
The Gladiator Lauza versus the Demolition Man.
And Lauza, I believe it's pronounced, is returning. He has a win against, I believe it's a Chinese fighter in his debut. Yeah, he beat Shuki Yao, who was a 2-3 fighter, in a decision. I remember this fight. I did look at the tape. Lauza's a guy that I put in my bank of, watch this guy. His striking is dynamic. His gas tank is bad, but it was his debut in the UFC, which it wasn't horrible, but it's something that he needs to work on. So this fight, he should definitely have worked on it. He had good takedown defense. His ground game wasn't that evolved. We didn't see much of it. He was defending a lot of shots for Miao. I really like Laza's striking. He's really a crisp striker. You'll see him throw punches down the pipe. At the 125 division, I feel like he does have potential knockout power. And I am a fan of this young man. I definitely think that we should be watching out for him in the debuter that he has at 125, the Gladiator.
A negative 400 favorite. That's crazy for a guy debuting.
And I would agree with that. And this is why I specifically looked at this. Well, I looked at all the fights. Watch tape. I did see on the Gladiator, I could see where people are giving him the 400. He is a mini Yair Rodriguez. He is one of the closest guys I've seen actually mimic DJ. He really, really is. He throws... The way that he transitions into his takedowns are very DJ-esque, but his striking is very Yair, where he throws a lot of spinning heels, a lot of the switch kicks to the head, or where they'll do that step up, put a leg up, and then kick with the other one over. He has finishes, and his ground game is good as well. He is a wrestler-based, but he rolls through a lot of... So if people even get him down, he's really good at rolling through and coming out on top. Great submissions, great transitions into takedowns, and his striking isn't boxing-based. It's more taekwondo or kick-based striking. But he's really adamant of mixing all this into takedowns really well. So I could see him being the favorite in this. 400 is way too much for an untested guy, especially at the level he's at. I have Laza decision right now.
I think I do too. Is that mine?
Yeah, I believe this is yours.
Yeah, I just am not in. I have the my debut. Naive self has screwed myself over so many times on cards with the debut fighters that have all the hype behind them. Yep. And I've seen so, like, I've just been screwed enough. I liked Laza in his last fight. I didn't think he was fighting somebody of that huge of a caliber, but I don't know anyone that Magomed has fought, so right. I feel like it's...
Right, and the Gladiator, I would say, at 125, he's not muscular.
And he's a finisher, which when you have guys that finish early, they have zero cardio, so it makes me less worried about Loss's cardio going into it if this guy's going to be whooped up too.
So he looks like a small... I would say that Laza is definitely the more muscular guy by far in there. He's going to have an inch... height, but I feel like Magomed is a Russian style of build. He's like a Habib. Habib doesn't look like the most muscular. Twine. Exactly. But he has a pace on him.
The Dan Hendo build.
Right. The wrestler, where Laza looked more a little more bodybuilder-esque, like he lifts actual weights. But
it's a weight great start.
It is. And I think that this has potential for Fight of the Night, legitimately. And there's a couple on here.
Yeah.
This one really is. I think that... Regardless, both of these fighters are two guys to watch out for in the division. Hopefully, Laza, if he does lose this... Well, he's on a win streak, so even if he loses this, he's not going to be right out of the door. But these are really interesting guys, regardless. I honestly will probably
be staying away from this fight on all my DraftKings.
I would think that that's probably a good play. If people think that this is a lock because he's a minus 400, that is not right. And always remember our... underdog picks, we get these right more than anything, where we're just like, hey guys, the odds are off on this. This fight is one of those odds. 400 is too much. This is a real scrap that Magomed's going to be on. It's going to be the first real competition he's ever faced. And if he makes it through this, it's going to be fun. Either way, both of these guys.
Even with guys we know more about, one that comes to mind is Groovy Landau.
Yeah.
He's one of those guys that he fought one fight. He comes in the next time, negative 400.
Yeah.
Everybody's super stoked on it. And then he does just... It's not that he didn't show up. It's just that's who he was. Yeah. Everyone just thinks they're so much better than they are. And so I'm like, you kind of need... This will be a good fight to know how either of these guys will fare in their next fights. But it's not... It's one I stay away from now.
Yeah, and I could switch my decision as well. We'll always wait till those weigh-ins to see what happens. I know that there's a couple guys that are going to be close.
We will be doing a recap of the fights this week, probably on Sunday.
Just so you all know. Stay tuned. Moving on to the next fight, we are moving to the ladies division at 135 pounds with Irene Aldana coming out of that Alexis... what is that? Guadalajara?
Chumunagan.
Is it against Chukagian?
Chukagian, yeah.
Yeah, Caitlin Chukagian, who's, I believe, coming out of
Is her nickname really Blonde Fighter?
Yes.
That's
gay! That is horrible. Against Robles? Robles? Aldana, I guess. Aldana just goes by Aldana. Robels, right?
That's a little weird. Something.
So, Aldana just was coming off of a few fight win streak. I believe she was a champ over at Invicta, and she just recently lost to Leslie Smith. Why? Leslie Smith, it's the same thing as a fight
Leslie
before.
Smith is awesome, and everybody underrates her.
Exactly. She's a very, very underrated fighter. And I think we might have got Leslie Smith right on that fight.
Yeah, she was our very first Leslie Smith underdog.
Aldana just hasn't taken that step up. Trukagian is on the level of Aldana. I think that this is a much better stylistic matchup for both of these fighters. They're both up-and-comers. They're both on coming off of a loss. Trukagian just lost to Liz Carmouche, which Liz Carmouche is iffy of a fighter. She just hasn't really bloomed, and she's at the end of her career in my eyes, or getting towards the end of it. And it's not a... Liz Carmouche is as veteran as you could get in the women's division because she was the first fight ever in the UFC for women. So a loss to her split decision isn't the worst thing ever. The wrestling, I feel like, for Carmouche and the power tended to be a lot for Trukagian. And Aldana doesn't come in with the power, but she does come in with the precision strikes and the cut by a thousand cuts. Where I feel like pressure... Leslie Smith's pressure, Leslie Smith's grittiness really took over for Aldana in the previous fight that they had. And I don't necessarily see Trukagian doing that to her, even though she has it in her. She does tend to be a bit more of a grinder. All the way around, this is a fight I'm going to stay clear from. This is a fight for me to enjoy and I'll try to make money off of because I see this being a 50-50 fight. Either one of these fighters can win, and I see this being a decision either way for either fighter. I got Aldana.
I got Aldana decision, and it's not because I am really high on her. I just am kind of low on Trukagian. I'm not a huge fan. She's one of those people that I just don't know if she's UFC caliber, but she's more so to fill a hole right now. I do think Aldana has a little more growth to do where I don't think we're going to see that from Trukagian. So I just have Aldana decision right now, but I totally agree. I don't think either of them's getting points here. I think it's going to be
35 points, 20 points.
Yep. There's going to be some punches laying, but they're not going to be significant. And
so the prop bet would be decision?
Yeah.
Either way, right?
Yeah. Either way, but yeah, right now I have Aldana decision as well.
Oh, nice. So we're actually staying together so far, and we haven't even talked about these fights. So interesting stuff. Moving on to the next fight, we have Gregory Gillespie versus Andrew Holbrook. Gillespie, this is a 155 fight. Gillespie just beat Franca in a decision 5 months ago, and before that...
Gregor Gillespie, and his nickname is The Gift.
The Gift. Not a bad name. Is it a bit unique? New York? So, he's coming out of Long Island, New York, Gillespie, and The Gift. He was alright. He's a scrappy guy. Good all the way around. There wasn't anything that really stuck out to me that I could remember in his fight. Okay takedowns. He's going to have 2-inch size disparity against Holbrook, and Holbrook actually has a 1-inch less reach than Gillespie. Gillespie, I feel like striking Muay Thai was pretty good, not tons of power. His wrestling hasn't really been tested that I've seen, and I feel like that's where Holbrook is going to potentially really take over in this fight, is Holbrook's wrestling. Holbrook doesn't have the flashiest style, but if he gets on you, it's hard to get him off. Holbrook just won a split decision over Jake Matthews 3 months ago, which Jake Matthews, I feel like, is a young up-and-comer. He lost to Joaquin Silva in a TKO. That was really quick. I feel like it was within the first 45 seconds of the fight, Holbrook didn't really get anything off. It was a Jose Aldo situation where all of a sudden he went limp baby and fight was over. I don't think that's a good representation for Holbrook. I feel like he did say he was having a hard wake-up prior to that loss. It's his only loss, and it was in the UFC. But since that Jake Matthews fight, Holbrook took many shots that were hard and he did just fine and then was still able to out-wrestle Matthews. And I feel like that's what's going to boil down in this fight. Both of these guys all the way around are MMA fighters. But I think that siding with the grappling, I'm going to go with Holbrook decision right now. I feel like he's a little bit of the favorite and I could see why just from the stuff that I went back on.
I have Holbrook decision. I just think he's a more well-rounded guy, but I think he's a grinder, and I just think he's going to finish the fight with a kind of boring victory.
Yeah, I feel like there's a couple of those actually this night where we've been decision four fights now in a row, but that's the kind of night we're going to have. We're going to have some flashy fights, but we're going to have some get your sleeping pill, or not sleeping pills, get your go pills, because you're going to need to stay awake. So moving on to the 205 division with Jan Blachowicz versus Patrick Cummings. Jan Blachowicz came into the UFC with a lot of credentials and has really not been there. He is a bit older in his career. At 34 years of age, he's had a long competitive career. Tends to be a wrestler. Going against Pat Cummings, who was an All-American national wrestler. So Blachowicz has really stifled people with his wrestling, and that's where he's won most of his decisions. Is in the wrestling, and he's working right into Pat Cummings' wheelhouse. Now, what I have to say with Pat Cummings is we know he's coming in wrestling. We know his striking isn't that good, and we know he doesn't have a chin. We know this because he has been losing to people where he's been winning the entire fight. All of a sudden gets clipped. Nogueira just beat Pat Cummings. I would really like to take Pat Cummings because I like his story a little bit more. He came in on short notice, fought Daniel Cormier. Mm-hmm. Like, he was working at Starbucks. I really like his story.
Dropped his apron.
Yep.
Walked out.
Yep, and was like, I'm fighting Daniel Cormier in a couple days. Let's do this thing.
Like, on less than a 10-day notice.
Yeah. It was
like a 5-day notice.
Against Daniel Cormier. Like, all hats off to Pat Cummings. He's a Cinderella story, but I feel like it's turning midnight for him very soon, and that pumpkin is, you know, going to be hard to fit into. Blachowicz, I feel like, is going to use his wrestling in reverse to keep the fight standing. And I do feel like Blachowicz is not necessarily heavy-handed, but a better striker. And I feel like Cummings' best route to winning is wrestling. And so if he can't take him down, I think it's a matter of time until Blachowicz either gets the TKO or ends up winning a decision. But I do have Blachowicz via decision right now.
I have Blachowicz KO round two, and it's not because I think when they're going to be wrestling, it's fine, and it's going to be a pretty equal match. I think Pat Cummings might even be a little better where he could take Blachowicz down. I just don't think Patrick Cummings has a chin anymore to take a punch from anyone in the 205 division.
I can see that.
Anyone. So I like him. I think he seems like a really great guy. I am not a huge Blachowicz fan. I just think he is going to knock Patrick Cummings out in that fight.
Patrick Cummings is probably out. I guess this will be his third loss in a row. He lost to Nogueira 10 months ago via knockout, which he's taken 10 months, which I like that. I like that he's taken a bit of time. Then prior to that, he also lost to Teixeira via knockout. So he's coming off with two knockouts in a row.
Two things. One, I like Blachowicz because Polish fighters are killing it right now. The other thing, I really thought Blachowicz was going to be like kind of an underdog in this fight, and it was going to be like my underdog pick, but no, not at all.
Well, the actual lines for Blachowicz is he's minus 130, so he's not that big, so it's pretty close of a coin flip. And I'd say that actually, those lines are all screwed up right now. Chukagian's the favorite against Aldana a bit, and the minus almost 500 now for the Gladiator, Magomedov.
Crazy.
So that's the one to definitely stay away from. If not, even that's worth it to put money on the Lauza for that type of a discrepancy
that kind
in the
of
fight.
Action.
Yeah, exactly. That type of movement. Moving on to the next fight, we have at the 145 division, Miles Jury versus Mike Della Torre. Miles Jury has lost, but only to the top echelon guys. People keep saying, oh, Mike Jury never has come up and done what he was supposed to do in the UFC. Yeah, his two only losses are to Charles Oliveira's, which submission, that guy's a snake on the ground.
And that's when Charles Oliveira was good.
Was good, yeah, I agree. He's coming up soon, and I'm like, ooh, that guy's getting ready to get out of a fight somehow. And on Cerrone, he lost a unanimous decision prior to that. So Miles Jury's only two losses in his 17-fight career.
Monsters.
Again, yeah, big monsters.
And he's a young guy, young.
The submission loss over Charles Oliveira was over a year and 2 months ago, and he's had injuries since then. I feel like he also had some issues with Reebok deals. Maybe I'm wrong on that, but there was other stuff going around, and he's been out for a bit. He definitely still has a ways to go in the sport, and we have many good fights out of Miles Jury.
I'll tell you something right now.
Yeah.
You know how I feel about, you can't have that nickname. If you ain't the best, it's like you can't be the Bullet. You're sorry, Beck Rawlings, you're not Rowdy.
Are you talking about Della Torre?
God damn it. How dare you? How so dare you?
We won't even say his nickname.
I feel like we should let everyone look it up and you'll be like, oh no.
Yeah, there is only one. You cannot. There's only one. And we know who the real one is. But he could have came in from another organization prior. It has happened before where he could have not given himself this. But if we find out that De La Torre gave himself this nickname, he's got to change it to something else.
He could be Mexican Monster if he wants to go.
Oh, I like that one. That's a good one.
Yeah, it's good.
That's a good one.
There's only one El Cucuy.
So
I'm just going against him now. Automatically. I just changed jury decision.
Yeah. Automatically. So De La Torre's last win out of his last three fights was to Young Chu Nam, and that was a split decision against Asian fighters coming out of Asia. Haven't necessarily looked the best. And the fact that it was a split decision should be like, ooh, just keep an eye out for that. He lost a submission to Godofredo Pepe, and he also lost via KO to Mexico Blanco. Prior to that, he had a win to Thiago Traitor, which I'd say is his marquee win. That's where De La Torre, Traitor is on his way out of the UFC, but he's somebody that was a big, big underdog.
My bet is El Cucuy is on his way out of the UFC.
I would agree with this, and I think Miles Drury...
he loses this fight, and then he's done.
And I would say that if there was more of a lock towards this night, I have Drury's submission via round two.
Okay.
I feel like Drury is going to get a finish. I really am going to like him if he's not too overpriced. What are his odds? Because I feel like Drury's going to probably be a bit more expensive. Yeah. Minus 440. Jesus. So...
we ain't telling you anything you don't know.
Yeah, true. This is, everyone can see what's going to happen with this fight. De La Torre is probably on his way out of the UFC. Moving on, we have a debuter out of the 155 pounds with Des Green. I feel like he used to be Desmond Green. Is he the Predator? What's his nickname there?
Yes.
Yep, the Predator, which I feel like is Ngannou. Ngannou, right?
Do you even want to call yourself the Predator if Ngannou is the other one? Come on, people. You have braids in your hair, you're the Predator.
25-8 just changed it to overtime, so you can change it, guys. And there's another guy later on in the card. Yeah, I love that. That's the best name. So much better. Also, AAA.
Yeah.
I love, guys, go with it, but if the fans can make something better, go with it, because they're the ones paying the bills, suckers. Yeah. They're the ones that are paying the bills. So, I feel like Green is coming over from Titan FC, which we've had other fighters come out of Titan and do well. Emmett is coming off of Alpha Male. Green's coming from TriStar. I did hear, and Green has done this, he's notorious for cutting his dreads a few times because he wasn't making weight. Huh. So, this is a fight that we have to wait for weigh-ins and see what Green looks like. If he's going to have to cut his dreads, he was saying that... I could be wrong on this. I feel like I was reading something that was saying he might move up to 70, but he's tired of this bullshit. Maybe he's just going to get a better nutritionist. But the 155 has been tough for him to get to. And he's at the perfect gym to really do really, really well for himself. Because Ferraz Ahabi's going to have the best game plan. And some notes that I do have on Green that I did like was that he has good takedowns because he's wrestling-based. He really uses his takedowns a lot in a lot of his fights. But his head movement is garbage.
Right down the middle.
Did you see any tape on him?
Uh-uh.
He stands straight and he reminds me of Derek Brunson. It's that type of head movement where he will throw three shots to come in for the takedown. So it's never the head movement. And this is what I feel like some, and I'm starting to notice it now that I've pointed it out in my own breakdowns, is wrestlers will tend to do this more than anything. And it makes sense to me because I used to be a wrestler. You don't have to move your head in wrestling because you use your head as a fifth limb. Mm-hmm. You use your forehead in their neck, in their side. You use it as a appendage to pin somebody down. So you want it to be on a straight and narrow so you can get to their hips and get them down. In a striking sport, that head has to be on a swivel, or they're going to throw up looping shots, if not knees and elbows, and your head's going to be right in the way every time, where you're going to be accentuating the force. And I feel like Desmond does this a lot. Green does this a lot in his fights, but he hasn't been fighting the caliber of fighters to really make him pay. And I feel like the UFC is really going to start to do that to him. And I feel like he's coming in with a lot of hype, but be very wary of this fighter. He's coming in with great accolades, great camp, but when you actually watch tape, I feel like his name is preceding himself a little bit and his striking is not up to par. His gas tank's okay, but he's coming up against Alpha Male.
So we know the gas tank
is good. We've seen Emmett do well. He's undefeated. He came in on short notice and broke his finger in the fight. He has
no problems taking it all the way to the end.
Yep. He's wrestling based. He reminds you of the atypical alpha male gerbil on steroids. Mm-hmm. He moves. And I feel like Desmond has an okay gas tank, but I have seen him slow down. If there's a fighter to fight or to slow down, it's Green instead of Emmett. Do we happen to know the lines on this? Does it have it for us?
The one thing... Right now, I have Emmett decision because I don't think Emmett is a finisher. I have Emmett decision because I predict that Green is going to have zero gas tank. I think after the first round of fighting off the takedowns, he's going to be whooped. I think we're going to see him breathing with his mouth open. I think that, which then he's not going to be able to tighten his abs as much when he's taking those punches. So I just think it's going to be like the death by a thousand cuts, as you'd say.
Yeah.
But I think it goes to decision. I think Josh Emmett just closes it out. I don't think Desmond Green's ready for this. Even though he's at the right gym, I think Josh Emmett is not a walkthrough fight.
I agree, and I have Emmett decision as well. The lines also show that, where I think Emmett right now is about a -245 favorite. So, almost 3-1 odds. Is this a decision fight? You ain't getting any DK points on that. Maybe I could see a finish also for Emmett, just because of the guillotine.
If Green's a giver-upper, I don't know that.
Well, it's also the... what Green does, where if he gasses and he keeps shooting and he doesn't have head movement, what does Alpha Male do if you shoot on him?
Guillotine.
They will jump on that guillotine all day, and so I could see a finish also happening for Emmett, but I am staying a little safe with it and going with the decision right now. So, another contender for fight of the night in my eyes, we have Shane Burgos at the 145 division against Charles Rosa. This is really a stylistic matchup that is going unseen. People are going to talk about both these guys after this fight. You heard it here first. Burgos is a flashy striker with okay takedown defense. The caliber of fighter that he has fought hasn't been the best. He did just recently beat his debut against Traitor, who De La Torre, who is a -500 right now, also beat the same guy. And he won in his decision as well. Traitor is just somebody who's always going to be there. He's just looks like
he's
an action figure.
Fish.
Yeah. Exactly. And... Burgos does have knockout power. I watched a lot of his shows, a lot of his tape coming up prior to this. He does have power, but the people he was fighting just are not UFC caliber. Charles Rosa came up through the UFC house, came up through a scene in Florida, is at American Top Team, and the only fights that he has lost ever have been in the UFC to Dennis Seaver, which was a unanimous decision where he got out-wrestled. And then the other fight was a split decision versus Yair, and that was for the show. That was for the belt, or for the Tough House to win it. And Charles Rosas was recently saying, like, I know I just lost to a guy who's going to be a contender. We all say Yair is up there, getting there.
Yeah.
So he lost to him via split decision. And he, if you remember correctly, Yair puked all over himself right after that. Because Rosa's
body shot.
Yeah. Well, not only that, but Rosa pushed the pace on him. It was really on Yair to show, even if he didn't have it in the gas tank, he was willing to go there. But that's why Yair is a contender.
Yeah.
Rosa's in that boat too. Rosa is an ultra grinder. He doesn't have the flashiest style. His striking's good. His wrestling and his ground game is where I think he really, really stands out. It's all going to be whether Burgos can have the takedown defense to keep this fight off of the ground, and I don't think that's going to happen. I feel like people are relying on Burgos' knockouts that he's had, because he's been very flashy in his knockouts and his stand-up, but he uses a very Muay Thai-centric base where you grab onto that plum and throw a knee up, and people like Charles Rosas will shoot a double leg takedown on you, get you to the ground, and guess what? You can't stand up after he gets on top of you. Charles Rosas is that style of fighter, and I feel like that's going to happen. I feel like I got Rosas right now, decision, but I could see a submission coming out because I could see Burgos with the knockouts that he's had, and I do see that he tends to fade a bit more in his striking style, where I've seen consistently Rosas does not fade. He does not fade.
Burgos isn't ready for a guy with this kind
of experience.
I agree.
Caliber and experience. I would agree with that 100%.
And I think it's crazy what a favorite Burgos is right now.
Burgos is actually a favorite, huh? Well, via Tapology.
And I think on lines, I might be wrong, but I think he's like 200 favorite.
Wow, Burgos is a minus 225 Burgos.
Oh, so, even more. So I was thinking like 185.
Wow, I did not expect that. I don't know why people are fading Rosa so much. It's this striking style of Burgos. It's very, very flashy, and he comes after you. He does really come after you. But guess what? Yair's knocked out a bunch of people too. And guess who he didn't knock out? Rosa.
True.
Burgos, I would say, has more
if
power.
If the lines are right now, the way it stands, Rosa's on right money. Now, Rosa might be our Leslie Smith underdog pick of the...
I could see that off the top of my head as well. And that's really surprising. I would think that this was much more of a
coin flip.
I
actually thought Rosa was going to be the favorite.
I could see that too.
So I'm really surprised. I thought really, I was just really riding surprised. Favorites this time. So yeah, and we haven't had a discrepancy in our picks yet, which is weird because of the underdog.
Yeah, and we really haven't talked about this at all. So it is... interesting line. This also could be fight of the night for me. I could really see this
one
doing
well. I don't think, honestly,
well.
I don't think Burgos has enough in him. I think he's going to give up.
That's what I see in my head.
I don't think
that's
it's
exactly
be a fight of the
what
night.
I see. And
I don't think he understands the kind of pressure that's about to come
at him. That
Rosas
is going
to
get at him, and people
the
are
thing I've
that.
Noticed, and I think I've noticed it in Joanna the most, ATT has this really great coaching method of taking the star out of the fighter and making the fighter rise again. I've just noticed it with the way JJ talks about herself now. Mm-hmm. It's like the ego's gone a little bit. Yeah. And people are like, oh, that makes me nervous for her, that ego's gone. Yep. That makes me nervous. But I don't think so. I just think American Top Team is of such a caliber that it's like, no, we're all here learning. Every day, we're all here learning. So
there's
I feel
a reason
like,
you see five top team fighters on every single card, any pay-per-view, any fight pass. American Top Team has a stable of fighters there, and they're all coming up together. And there's a couple other top team guys on this card. So, you know, Rosas and them are all getting ready. And next week, there's a bunch of top team guys on that fight. So, definitely can't wait for that fight.
I think this fight could be the fight of the night.
This is my... But I've talked about this on the podcast before. This is the one that I don't give a shit.
Second favorite fight of the night. Because I still... I
the main
think
event
the
gets you?
Nah, the Musasi-Weidman.
Oh, that is a... Yeah, we're getting there. But...
The main event I could really give two shits about.
Agreed. I would totally agree with that. We have a fight between Sean Propane Strickland versus Kamaru Usman?
Mm-hmm. Kamaru Usman.
Damn.
Kamaru Usman.
This, I'm going to just say that I totally on purpose switched Tarzan's nickname because I hate Strickland's nickname of Tarzan.
That didn't make sense for him.
Hey, people say that he's as strong as a gorilla and grew up with monkeys and stuff. People are just...
Well, you can try to prove that now against the Nigerian nightmare.
I agree with that. But I think Strickland Propane is definitely way cooler of a name. King of the Hill, all that good stuff. But, Strickland has only lost once ever in his career, and I've picked ultra right against... I've been on the Strickland bandwagon since he stepped into the UFC. He lost a decision to Ponzinibbio, which Ponzinibbio is not an easy fight for anybody in the sport, and he was overlooked for a long time. And Usman has only lost once in his career as well, and it was early on in his career, and I believe it was also a decision. So these fighters are essentially...
Yeah, I think it was Tough House, Mike Graves... I think he lost.
But if it is that, then I don't think it is that. Because Usman, those are exhibitions, and they don't usually go on their professional records. But,
No, I think it was right. I think they were the ones who fought for the...
Belt?
I think so, and I think he lost by decision.
Let's check it out. Let's just see. Yeah, this is... Yeah, it was his second fight ever as a pro in the CFA, and he lost a submission via choke. Who is that fighter? I can't see.
Yeah, and that the fighter who beat him, Jose Canseras, was on a 1-0 record, so.
Interesting. But he was so brand new into the pro. It happens.
He was a baby.
Exactly. So these guys are close to as undefeated as you can get. They're both prospects in the sport. Whoever loses, it doesn't matter. They're going to go on another streak because they're both. Usman's on a, what, like 8-9 fight streak right now?
Yeah.
And Strickland is only, he's on a 3-fight streak, but he was on a... like a 16 fight streak, 15 fight streak before that. So these guys know how to win. What I like with Usman, his wrestling. I mean, you got to go with his wrestling. You know that he has one of the highest takedown ratios in all of MMA. Mm-hmm. He has, I believe it's a 5.86 takedown ratio per minute.
are per fights. Like, that's insane. Usually when guys go above two takedowns regularly,
they're exhausted.
Well, and it's a lot of takedowns. That's usually high demographics. The fact that he has a 5 average takedown, unreal. So you know that he's coming to wrestle.
I think two things come with him.
Uh-huh.
One, he is the only guy with that body style that his cardio doesn't blank out after two rounds. He's the only ultra muscle dude, but he's, that's he built grew up the way wrestling. He is.
When
yeah.
he moved from Nigeria, he went right into American wrestling.
And the other
wrestling.
Thing that I just think about him, even though they're going in at the same weight and whatnot, I think he's one of those guys, like a Dan Henderson, that once he's up against you, you're like, holy shit, is this guy strong.
But people say the same thing about Tarzan, and I've seen that this is, and we talked about this briefly. Yeah, because you
think Sean Strickland is a little skin and bone.
And people grab him and they're like, fuck, this kid's strong as hell. So these is going to be two rocks going against each other, two grinders going against each other. Strickland has really good takedown defense as well. Again, he's never went against somebody who's looking as actively as Usman is for the takedowns and has a caliber of takedowns that Usman has. But Strickland also has a high output of strikes. I believe his last 2 and 3 fights, he was averaging significant strikes, about 70 apiece. So that means he threw about 100 strikes in his fights either way, and he's won decisions and some submissions in there. Usman in his last fight, I think, threw around 50 significant strikes. So we know that Usman's starting to get there with the volume of strikes, not just the takedowns, which makes him even that much more dangerous. The aspect of this that is the most interesting to me is going to be Usman's going to be trying to take down Strickland, whether he can stop it, and then if he can't, whether Strickland's going to be able to get up off of the ground or if he's dangerous off of his back, and Strickland is dangerous off of his back. But we know that the anti to jiu-jitsu is wrestling. So Usman can stifle a lot of that and has against a lot of other good guys. This is a fucking coin flip for me. Every single day, I don't know who I'm going with. I have Strickland because I'm a bit more of a dick rider with Strickland right now. But Usman is a potential title contender. So is Strickland. I got Strickland decision. Who do you got?
Usman's one of my favorite fighters in the UFC right now. I never have bet against them. I'm not going to start now. The only issue I have, my only question is, I watched another one of my favorite fighters, Luque, just come in and not look great.
They're the same camp.
Yes.
Good call.
And we've seen also a lot of turmoil come out of that camp with the Black Zillion split up and everything, that it just... It's the only nerves I have with picking Usman.
It's a transitioning
Usman,
period for them.
What's going on with your camp? Do you guys have a head coach over there? Mm-hmm. Do you trust your head coach? Do you like him? Do
is
you want to fight for him?
Is as good as it
yeah,
was?
Like, it's have you guys all been on screw-off zone? I have no idea. But Kamaru Usman's one of my favorites. I think he's an up-and-comer. I think Strickland's one of the guys you have to get past to be that. I think this fight puts either of these guys in contention. I just don't think... Sean Strickland's so young... It's not his time. It's Usman's time. Usman's about in that zone where he's getting to be the like prime of his career. I think Usman makes a run this time, and not that Sean Strickland won't be back. He's so young. I think this is going to be a hard fight. I do believe it's going to go to decision, and I just think Usman's going to edge it out right now. So this will be the first fight we pick different right now.
No, I think we did have one more earlier. Chookagian versus Aldana, we had different. No, we were right on that. Okay. So, fun fights. This, definitely, we gotta watch weigh-ins. What is the line on that, anyways?
Yeah, let's look.
Is it pretty close? It's up towards the top. We have, wow, Usman being almost 350 favorite. Okay. Wow. So I would even say that this could potentially be a DK play for Strickland. Because if we do see this being a decision, but if Usman wins, he wins by being on top of people.
The whole time he stifles people out.
Yeah, people get 15 points
on DK. He doesn't take a lot of damage.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Definitely the more dangerous ground game, Usman. Striking
Usman.
I think I'll give to Strickland, I think.
Say Usman.
I think he hits
the more dangerous
hard.
Ground is Usman, the more dangerous striking's Usman, the stronger guy's Usman. It's just where Usman's head at. If Usman wants to win, he wins. That's it. That's how I feel about Kamaru Usman.
I feel like Tom Breeze is a really known striker, really, really well-known striker, and Strickland just beat him in striking and grappling. I feel like Strickland striking.
It was a questionable.
It was a split. It was a split. It was questionable. I had Strickland in that. Usman
doesn't leave it to question when he wins.
Oh, we will see. This is one of the more splits we've had in a long time. I feel like we're pretty set on the opposite way. Woo! Getting fired up. All right, moving on to the next fight at 155 pounds. We have former Bellator champion Will Brooks going against the former shell of himself, Charles Oliveira. And I don't mean to be too much of a stickler to that, but Oliveira's really underperformed with really weird things starting the Max Holloway stuff.
Dudes ever you pointed out to me, I don't like him because he gives up.
He does give up
in fights. And ever since you pointed it out, I haven't watched him in a fight yet that he hasn't just given up. I'll never pick him again, and I'm not going to ever pick him against a guy like Will Brooks who's beaten some of the best guys in the world and then just came over here and fought a fat cowboy.
Yep.
That's Brazilian the only cowboy. Yeah, Brazilian fat cowboy. But I just feel like, and everyone that knew a lot more about fighting than I do said Will Brooks shouldn't have taken that fight. He was 6 pounds over, so he didn't even try at some point. So he was walking in way heavier of a dude.
Like, we said that on this podcast. Yeah. I feel like I remember being like, "Ooh, watch out, guys, because that dude's gonna be in."
I think I picked Oliveira or Cowboy Oliveira.
Yeah, something Brooks. Like that.
Yeah, and so I'm gonna pull for Will Brooks this time. I think he has to come out and really destroy if he wants a name in the UFC.
Right.
I think what a perfect guy to do it against, because Oliveira's going to take one hit and then be like, wah, and then give up. That's how he fights now.
I agree with that. I feel like Oliveira, we know his Muay Thai is okay.
I could even change it to a finish. I have Brooks' decision right now, but I could change it to a full finish.
I could totally see that as well. And just to go over it a bit for the fans, we know that Oliveira is ground specialist. He did beat Miles Drury, who is a great up-and-comer.
But he was losing that fight, too.
Oh, yeah. And in submission, he can come from anywhere. The Muay Thai of Oliveira is good. He really is. I mean, he has all the tools in the bank to win it. But when push comes to shove, he's like, oh, get me out of here. Give me my paycheck and let's go home.
He has no heart.
I would agree. And I really don't like to say that.
Yeah, what do I know?
Let's
go. That's what it seems like.
That's what it does seem like. But I'd say, hey, Oliveira, let's go to WSOF because you're not going to have the guys that are going to put you to the test that Will Brooks is going to put you to. You're going to win those fights. Yeah. Be a champ. Make way more money. And you ain't going to get beat up as hard. Will Brooks, we know he's coming at you wrestling, striking all the way around. Tough, tough fighter. We felt like the size in his last fight was probably the biggest discrepancy. And just, if it goes to the ground, it's going to be the wrestler on top winning. And I don't think there's much more to talk about. We feel like Will Brooks is going to be a decided favorite in this versus Oliveira, because other people do see the same things we see in Oliveira, that he does lose
right now
fights.
To me, Oliveira just must be a big enough name in Brazil to be that Brazilian placeholder to make sure the Brazilians tune in when Cyborg or Jose Aldo aren't fighting. Mm-hmm. Or Silva.
Oliveira is a minus, or is the plus 200 favorite.
That's right.
Or no, not favorite, underdog. And yeah,
that's
Will Brooks,
right. Yeah, that's right.
Is the favorite. And I totally see that. I have Brooks' decision as well, but I do think that Brooks could finish this as well, so that might move into the finish. Definitely, let's see weigh-ins, because Oliveira does have trouble making weight. Moving on to the next fight at 170 pounds. This is a veterans fight. These are two old-school guys. These have been around for a long time, even though Thiago Alves, at 33 years old, is only 33. He's been fighting since he was like 21 back in the early 2000s against Patrick Cote. Patrick Cote is 37, and his recent loss is to Donald Cerrone 9 months ago via a TKO. Before that, he had a good little streak against Ben Saunders, Berkman, and who's the other guy? Joe Riggs. Which Joe Riggs, that's not a real win. That's not a real win. Everybody's beating Joe Riggs. And then he lost to Stephen Thompson via decision. Patrick Cote. Patrick Cote is tough. I was just listening to him. He said, I'm not coming in and doing everything different. So we're going to see the exact same Patrick Cote that we've always seen, which is he's got an iron jaw, he's got a good gas tank, and he has good takedowns. If he's not a TriStar, he bounces around through TriStar. He's at Brazilian top team Canada. So I don't know. I don't know who else is coming out of there off the top of my head, but this is going to more than likely for me be a decision. Thiago Alves is known for his Muay Thai, his leg kicks. Incredible striker, really fast switch kicks. I feel like he's on a two-fight losing streak, but even prior to that two-fight losing streak, his TKO win over Tim Means, he was losing that fight handedly.
Jordan Means.
He was losing that fight handedly and then came up with a body shot, which ended up knocking Means out of the fight. But he was losing that fight. And to Baczynski, that was just a really slow decision. So Alves has really, in my eyes, diminished in his last few fights. And it's shown he's just had a long career against top level. He's been in the top 10 contention since he came into the sport. He's now out of there. And this is starting to get into loser leaves town for Alves. Cote might have one or two fights left him in as well. But I think that this is going to be a boring decision, and I do have Cote as a decision in this.
Same, and it's not because I think Patrick Cote is on to huge great things. It's just because I think Alves is over. Yeah, as far as UFC over.
Yeah, and it really, really sucks because he could finish it at any given time, but people have figured him out.
I don't know enough about enough, but he's just one of those guys that I feel like life after USADA. He's just one of those guys. He may have never popped. I just think his build and the way he looks, I just think it might not.
He does have really good takedown defense, but I... So with his takedown defense, Cote isn't going to be able to get him to the ground, but Cote
has an iron jaw. But that can't be your best thing you have, takedown defense.
It's a... Well, when you're a striker and you don't have good takedown defense, that's where they could beat you easier. So he can keep the fight standing, but it's whether he can finish Patrick Cote, and I don't know if he necessarily can. And the gas tank, I'm going to give the Cote decision. Same. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Definitely funner fights on the way. We have moving, and that, I believe, started off our pay-per-view. Or no, the main card started with Cavillo versus Gonzalez is the next fight at 115 pounds.
Lady strawweight division. So
Cavillo just is from Top Team. Or not Top Team, Team Alpha Male. She's getting a debuter on the main card. This is a fight that, quickly, I just have to say, doesn't make any sense to me on this pay-per-view card, because we have a fighter that's one fight deep into the UFC and another debuter. You put Strickland versus Usman on this fucking main card. You take these ladies and put them on the undercard. You put them on Fight Pass because they haven't earned this main card spot.
This says something, though. It says that the UFC is... I feel like Faber's such a company man that they're going to take, they're taking his girl, and they're making her a fucking superstar. They're feeding her, you know, what, I don't even know where this other lady has fought out of before.
There was, what other fights does she have? She recently, out of the HFC and XC, or XFC or XFD, she's coming out of Chicago, Illinois.
I never say they're sure bets in fighting. Ever. I say Cavillo is a sure bet on this card, and I always stay away from the women for sure bets. But I actually think this is such a favor for Faber, for Alpha Male. They want to keep getting fed. They're giving Cavillo, she's exciting. She has a good shit talk. She's a pretty, I think she finishes this fight in a pretty quick decision.
You totally took a
pretty quick submission.
A bunch of my talking points, because that's exactly what I had written down for this breakdown a little bit when I did get in, because I like to get into these main events a bit more because they're main events, our main cards. Cavillo is getting fed somebody who should not be in the UFC or is bordering, and who should she be fighting? Somebody else that's debuting, not someone with
Angela Hill versus Cavillo makes more sense than the Angela Hill fight you mentioned.
Yeah, versus Grasso.
Yeah, and Grasso should be fighting PVZ, and Angela Hill should be fighting Cavillo. Those are better fights.
Right.
Who is this lady?
Cavillo comes in with the wrestling with the Alpha Male. I might as well be fighting
Cavillo.
Gonzalez, the tape that I saw on Gonzalez, I was really trying to look at an eye of like, ooh, what does the UFC see that I don't see? She's got heart. That's about it. Like, she comes in and the striking isn't the best, but it's not bad. It's definitely coming along with her. She definitely comes in with her grinding style, which is more wrestling based, even though she doesn't really use good wrestling. It's just that she gets women to the ground and then will tend to beat them there. But it's more positionally, where she'll get side control and kind of ride them out, get some submissions, offer those areas.
I just think everything that she does isn't going to happen against someone experienced. At all against Cavillo. Especially someone from Alpha Male.
What exactly, with the wrestling, just to sum it all up real quick, is the takedowns for Gonzalez are so bad, so bad, that she tries to pull in
JV wrestling, I would tell, or if I was had a wrestler that I saw doing that, I'd say, don't pull them on yourself. Use technique and pull them over your hip, or you're going to get countered every time, and they're going to fall into a better position, and then they're going to pin you slash or submit you in MMA. But she will put herself out of position thinking that she's getting the fight to where she wants it to be, and she'll put herself in a bad situation and expect her scrappiness or wiliness to get her out of that position. Against Cavillo, that's not going to happen. Cavillo's going to submit her. I feel like it's a submission round two.
Probably round one. Probably round one. Yeah, I'm going to change one or two. Round one, even here in Utah. I had Cavillo submission round two, but I'm going to change it to one.
Gonzalez is going to strike really rudimentary, like 1-2 combinations with not much power. And Cavillo is going to, she's going to wrap her and go for a really sloppy takedown. She's going to go for a freaking head and arm. And Cavillo's going to end up just taking the back and getting a rear naked choke. That's exactly what's going to happen, because Gonzalez runs in for that head and arm throw. And she'll put her hips in the way of danger when she doesn't need to. And did it in 3 different fights that I watched of her. Definitely, it doesn't make any sense why Cavillo is on this main card. In the UFC, let's get her in here. But
so put Cavillo all over your all DraftKings. Over.
And I would say the same thing, because you already said it, I almost did it. I don't like to say that there's a real sure bet on this night.
Especially this with ladies, we never say it, no matter the lady.
It's a sure bet.
I think this, the last time we said it was the Bullet versus Pena. This is a sure bet. With our girl.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say Cavillo's in that. And what do we know, the line on Cavillo versus?
No, and you know, it's not even because I want to be I don't.
Almost 300 favorite
for I don't think Cavillo deserves a hype train yet. I just think they're giving her a feeder.
I think they are as well. And moving stylistically, it moves perfectly. Lesbo's fight of the night. The hunkiest fight of the night. Are these the two most attractive guys on the card?
I don't know.
We have a potential movie star. What's the All-American? He's on that Kevin Can't Wait show with a bunch of fighters that are getting work on that.
This would be a fight if you just took him and put him in a movie.
Yep.
It would be like an All-American cop versus a terrorist.
Is it because he's Muslim?
I don't know.
He's Dutch. He's from the Dutch. Yeah, I wouldn't even know if he was
Muslim or not. I just think for the look, you can put a Habib Nurmagomedov on him.
So, this is at 185 pounds. This really is stylistically a beautiful fight. What can we really say about either fighter? Former champion and Chris Weidman. He's been up in a bit of a skid, where he lost to Rockhold and then a flying knee to Romero. I mean, 2 finishes in a row. He's up there in age. Well, not really up there. He's 32 years old, but he's a guy who's been wrestling since he was a kid. And there's not one wrestler who doesn't have an issue from just wrestling, let alone go into a career that you actually take strikes and damage and submissions. I would say that the surgeries are accumulated for Weidman. He's had his knees before he beat Anderson Silva. Joe Rogan talks about it after the facts, where I'm like, thanks a lot, Joe, after the fight, where he's like, everybody in the back knew that he couldn't touch his own knee or ankle to his butt. His knees were so shot. And I'm just like, let me know beforehand so that I don't bet on him. Right. Even though he came out and won those fights, it's still just like, that's heavy duty. He didn't get much better for him. He still has those reoccurring issues on his knees, his joints. Musashi, I don't think, has those type of injuries. I feel like maybe he had a knee or something tear. But as far as fighting, as far as experience, Weidman has a combat experience that goes into a childhood. Musashi has that, but it was a different level of combat experience. His wasn't wrestling as much as it was kickboxing, Netherlands, Dutch, Muay Thai. I mean, not only is he an outstanding precision striker with power, his ground game is elite. So is Chris Weidman's. I would give the disparity for striking to Musashi leaps and bounds further. But I would say that Weidman's can neutralize the fight more on the ground. But Musashi's really good on the ground too. Really, 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 really good.
To me, I just feel like Gegard does not fight up to his guy. When he's fighting the upper echelon guys, he always looks like garbage to me. When he's fighting these other guys, I'm like, damn, Gegard's a contender.
Yeah.
And then when I watch him against the upper echelon guys, I don't know what it is. I think Chris Weidman, the last 2 losses were such stupid mistakes. He was winning both those fights, in my opinion, until like really odd mistakes. I don't think Gegard has that Yol knee. I don't think he has it.
I think he'd... I can see... I feel like he's a southpaw as well. Musashi is... I feel like I could see a straight punch getting there. I don't know why. In my mind's eye,
I don't think
I see Musashi or I see Weidman going out.
Even though those last two things are knockouts, I am like, oh, that knee, God,
that
damn.
Knockout was 4 months ago.
Mm-hmm.
4 months ago, Musashi has great takedown defense. But even if he gets taken down, Musashi is great on the ground.
This is such a good. I think it this puts could be either of these guys right back into contention.
Oh, I agree 100%. I agree.
I think it's good for both of them. It could be like Musasi's first time around if he gets past Chris Weidman, but I just don't think he gets past Chris this time. I just don't see Chris losing three times in a row. And I don't think Musashi is of the caliber of Luke Rockhold or Yoel Romero.
If Chris loses, do you think he steps away or do you think he keeps going?
I think he fights again. I think he's a big enough draw, especially now that they're in New York. I don't think he has to be done yet.
Man, I kind of think that he might start to be on his way
We might hear that Carlos Condit thing from him where he says, I'm going to retire and then I'm going to come back. But we might start seeing it if he loses. I just don't see it happening. And I think even if Weidman or if Musashi loses, it does not. I think, you know, we see Musashi again and again and again. But I don't, I mean, they're only a year difference in age.
Yeah. And that's where I would go back to the, I think that Weidman has a bit more wear and tear on him where Musashi doesn't. So the cardio's there for both of them.
I don't know. Think about the even fights with Anderson Silva that Weidman had. They weren't very, he wasn't freaking hurt really bad in those fights.
I agree. I totally agree.
And even the Luke Rockhold fight, he was pretty much picking Luke apart until that weird spinning elbow. And then the Yoel Romero fight, he was picking Yoel apart until that weird knee.
Ooh, I thought it was 1-1 in the Weidman-Romero fight. I feel like Weidman took the second round and then he was winning.
Weidman was owning the whole thing.
I could be misremembering that. There's so many fights going on in my head. But the angles, Musashi has it, like... Weidman is good, but Musashi is so much better.
Weidman, to me, to my eyeballs, looks in better condition than I've ever seen him.
Interesting.
And I feel like he just got over some knee surgeries and stuff. Like, this is the most healthy he's been coming into it.
Have you been watching the Embedded?
No, not at all.
Oh, they're fun. I really recommend them to anyone.
I watch them sometimes.
Anyone's.
I just haven't had time this way.
Yeah, it's been a bit. It's been busy life for sure. Definitely can't wait
but
for
we
this
split
fight.
This one too?
We're splitting this. I got Musashi decision, and I can see myself calling a finish. We got to wait till weigh-ins.
I got Weidman decision right now, and I could have Weidman finish.
Woo! Yeah. Another one.
So our two ones that we have different right now are this and what one? There was one other fight that we went.
Strickland-Usman.
Strickland-Usman. Okay. Strickland-Usman. Those are interesting, because those are actually going to be... I might have all four of those people on DraftKings cards.
Oh,
because
wow,
I like Strickland.
Yeah.
If he wasn't fighting Usman, I'd usually have him. And I like Musashi. If he wasn't... I'm not a huge Weidman fan. That's the whole thing.
That's
everybody
weird.
That's always a Chris Weidman fan, this might be the first time...
Musashi's become... Everyone has said it. Like, he's opened it. He's turned a new level. He's now talking. He's now doing a lot of stuff he wasn't before. And it's becoming a fan favorite because he's doing it his way. And... it's really good for him.
Let me just
like
run
him.
Through the last wins, though, for Musashi.
Okay. Yep.
We got Latisse.
Latest.
Which is like,
Thomas
Latisse.
Yeah, he's on his way out.
Thiago Santos.
A good fighter who's exploited ground game, but I like Santos.
An old Vitor Belfort.
TNT Vitor himself.
And then... Uriah Hall, the most overrated motherfucker. So I'm like, I take a guy that's fought two losses, Yoel Romero, Rockhold, over the guy that beat Uriah Hall.
But I mean, Weidman beat Silva, which Silva was unbeatable
time,
up until that point.
Up until the
so
time.
Up until that point. Then he beat Machida, who was good.
Machida.
And then he beat TNT Belfort. Same boat. And then he lost to the same caliber of other fighters with Rockhold. No, I'd say they're better than Uriah Hall.
Way better
than Uriah Hall. But if Musashi's in the same boat, he was winning that fight until that kick. He was winning that fight up until that kick in the knee from Hall. He won the fight. No, he got knocked out. Sasi
beat Uriah Hall.
Not the first time. Remember that upset of the year almost? Remember that? Yeah. It was a spinning kick. Musasi ducked into it to get the takedown because he was winning that on the ground. And then a knee after he got hurt. But I mean, that's...
The one thing that makes me nervous for Weidman in this is Musasi has been active as fuck.
Yes.
Like, so active. Yes. Fighting. And that's a lot.
And not taking damage either. Not taking damage in his fights. Where has he come out bloodied and battered in any of those
fights? I think
fights?
I really just have Weidman decision because he has to win.
Yeah. That's what I think, though. That's what I'm saying. And he's being on that show Kevin Can't Wait with Boss Rutten. He's getting a recurring role.
But would you say this... That this is Musasi's biggest challenge he's ever faced?
I think Jacare Souza was his biggest challenge he ever faced.
How long ago was that?
That was in Strikeforce and he lost to Souza. And these are all valid points.
And that was not the best Souza.
No, and that wasn't the best Musasi. I think they've both grown from there.
So we can go tit for tat on it.
Yeah. We can keep going on that.
Last fight of the show.
The main event. We have a rematch between... Who's this mofo?
Hold on. Okay. Sorry. Joe Rogan?
Trying to interrupt. So we have a rematch at 205 pounds versus Daniel. What is DC Cormier versus Rumble Johnson? Or Anthony Rumble Johnson? I mean, they're both on a 3-fight streak. What can we really explain? Anthony Johnson's coming in with cannons for hands. Daniel Cormier has one of the biggest heads in the game. Daniel Cormier has already proven that he can take the big shots.
He ain't Chinny.
Exactly.
He's probably never going to be Chinny.
He hasn't been hurt in any of his last fights.
Rumble has like the worst cardio. If someone's going to exploit that, it's DC.
With the takedowns. If there's a team that could get Anthony Johnson ready for this, is it the Black Zillions? Is it the Black Zillions, Rashad Evans and all those guys?
But I feel like Anthony Johnson, uh-huh. This is the weird thing. I feel like he's at combat. I don't think he's with Usman and them. I think he's with Robbie Lawler and Rashad Evans. Bunch of guys that aren't going to... But that's the whole thing you could say about DC, too. We know everyone in his gym's hurt, so is he really warming up?
But I feel like he has had... Rockhold's been practicing with him.
DC has the biggest media obligations of any other person ever. He is on camera more than Conor McGregor.
Current fighters. Yeah.
He's like, always, you know. But yeah, maybe he's at the point with his skill set that he just goes and trains a little. He's not trying to fucking reinvent the wheel. He's like, I know what I'm going to do.
I agree with that. So we know that the wrestling for DC with all his credentials is Olympic prowess. And we could just go off of the first fight. Anthony Johnson landed a couple heavy, heavy shots. If we've ever seen Daniel Cormier even close to hurt, it was those shots, right?
Yeah.
He stumbled, went to the ground, got up, took him down. Anthony Johnson. And Anthony Johnson said, head, and this happens regularly to fighters. If they hit you with their best shot and they feel like it hit you clean and you don't go down, then they say, fuck, what do I do next? Because that just took some of my energy. Like, I can hit this guy 10 more times like that, and he's not going to go down.
Well,
now
the other
what?
Thing, if you're not knocking DC out cold, he can get you down enough to regain Brand all his wherewithal.
And we saw with, like, Oliveira, what did we see Anthony Johnson do in the second round of their first fight? Give up if there was a fighter to give up. And I would give up in the first 30 seconds against Daniel Cormier. I'm not saying...
The shittiest thing about Daniel Cormier is he's the fucking second baddest man on the planet.
I know. We can't wait for
that's it.
JBJ.
I don't think anyone beats DC except Bones.
I agree. I
just don't think it's Anthony Johnson. Yep. And I...
He gave up in his first fight. It's going to happen again. I could see Anthony Johnson, instead of trying his... Maybe more of his stay away... style and then come in with the over the top strikes, maybe him going with knees or uppercuts might be a better avenue.
He has 10 minutes. If he doesn't knock DC out in 10 minutes,
I think it's 5.
Okay, he has 5 minutes.
I think he has 5 minutes.
We can even cut the difference. He has 7.5 minutes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But anyway, you cut it, that's it.
Yep.
And
yep,
DC knows that. If we know it, DC knows that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So
yeah.
Go in, hold him up against the cage, grind him out, take away that power the first 5, 10, 7 minutes, whatever, and then it's DC's ball game. And I think we see a DC submission.
If there's someone to come in nervous, who's it likely to be? DC or Anthony Johnson?
It ain't Cupcake.
Exactly.
I think he changes his name to Cupcake.
That would be dope.
That would be awesome. And it makes more so much sense.
That would be so dope. I would like that.
DC Cupcake Cormier.
Uh-huh. That would be cool.
I think it makes him more likable.
So, I have decision, but I could easily see myself getting a submission in the later rounds for giving up.
I have submission round four right now. But yeah. I could agree with you that it goes to decision just because DC decides
to... Well, it'd be to Anthony Johnson saying, like, okay, I'm not going to give up this fight. And even if I lose a decision, that'll be his game, yeah. his win in his head. But Anthony Johnson has lost in other fights because of him giving up, but it was the weight cuts. But either way, he got kind of set in that pattern. I feel like it's going to happen again. They're both competitors,
fun
both
week
elite.
End of fight.
Yep. And next week, I got DC. That's the breakdown. Definitely have some DK lines that I don't think are out yet. Let's go over our plays that we are think that maybe some prop bets that we could see coming along.
I think we put Cavillo on every card.
Finish. So a prop bet on her for a finish because we see a finish yeah. coming out of there. Do we go under 2.5 or
our
over?
Leslie Smith underdog pick of the week is Rosa.
Yeah, I'd agree with that 100%.
That's it. Yep. And I think from there, it's...
We can't wait for Usman and Strickland to get it on, and we can't wait for Weidman and Musasi to do it.
If you have to go between two, though, I think the Musasi-Weidman is going to be a finish.
Great point.
Whereas I think the Usman-Strickland is going to be a decision.
I would agree with that. So. It's way more likely to be a decision. So if there were be... Yeah. I would 100% Usman versus Strickland decision either way is a prop bet to go with that. Other finishes, Emmett, I feel like, but those were heavy favorites. I mean, this is a really heavy favorited night of like people that are in the 200s and 400s. These aren't coin flip of fights that I thought they would be.
Weird prop bet of nights.
Right, Błachowicz-Cummings, that's a fight that I feel shouldn't be as close as it is, honestly. I feel like Błachowicz-Cummings should be Błachowicz a 2-1 favorite, and then that's like... literally a -130 for Błachowicz.
It's just because he's so sketchy sometimes.
Yeah, he's just really undershown what he's to do. Weidman Musasi is at a -105. Weidman -115 Musasi. That is a coin flip.
That's
of a
about
fight.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. But I feel like there's many
and
other lines.
And DC's the underdog.
It makes no goddamn
no
sense at all.
He already
makes
beat
no
him
sense
once.
At all. So
everybody's
right now,
thinking, so
if
I'm
you're
picking DC too.
If you're parlaying people, you're putting DC at plus money on there. Because how often do you get DC plus money? Other than with JBJ.
And Anthony Johnson's no fucking John Bones Jones. He ain't beating DC.
He just has power. That's it. He just has power. Well, no, his strikes, he does have a Dutch style of kickboxing, very power oriented, but DC has proven that he can do it. I think that DC actually avoids those power shots this time around. And it's an easier fight. Yeah, it's easier than the first time around. Because he's a technician who does have that type of style. He's done it before. In fights, even though he's never lost other than a JBJ. Other thing you want to hit on before we get
I'll
out
miss
of
you
here?
Guys until Sunday night. We'll give you a recap. You'll hear it Monday morning for your workday.
Follow us on Twitter.
At Lesbo and the Bean.
We also have a website. We're also on Opinion. And remember to look for us all around the web because we're going to end up spreading our feet a little bit in the sand. We're going to get out there to you guys. Thank you very much.